This is Coffee O'Clock, Jane and Sharon with you. And with us is Adelaide author Meredith Reske. Good day, Meredith.
Hi, Sharon.
Now, one of the things that we do here on Coffee O'Clock when we have a new guest is we ask you about what you drink your coffee out of, because that tells us a lot about you. What's on your mug says a lot about you. So describe your favourite drinking mug for us.
Oh, you're going to be in terrible trouble here. I don't drink coffee.
So that tells us
that's
something.
That's it. Out.
Over, out we go. So what do you drink? What do you drink?
I've taken to drinking tea.
Yeah.
Because I needed to be sociable.
Right.
But I'm an absolute tea snob. I have to drink out a fine bone china.
And what's on the bone china?
It has to be flowers.
Flowers. And why flowers?
I don't know.
Is it the elegance of the drinking?
I think so.
The tea?
I don't know. It's because that's the way my grandmother drank tea.
Ah. There you go. Just quietly, Meredith, I sometimes have a cup of tea and Coffee O'Clock. So we are quite welcoming to tea drinkers as well. It's great to welcome you back to Adelaide because, as Sharon mentioned, you're a well-known, very well written too, about 13 novels based
16.
In Adelaide. 16, sorry, I missed three. But you've moved interstate, so welcome back to Adelaide.
Yes.
But I have got to say, first up, I've got your new book in my hand. It says E.B. James. You've changed your name.
I know. Well, look, only just momentarily. So for the Meredith Reske fans who like the period drama romance, I don't want them to fear that it's never coming back, because, in fact, my summer project is to write a new period drama romance, so never fear. But I wanted to meddle with a different genre, so we've gone to crime drama.
Why did you have a different name, though, so that people don't know it's you?
I don't mind people knowing it's me, but if I get any new readers for crime drama and they like it, and then they go to get another book of mine and they find it's all period drama romance, they go, what is this? You know, it's not what they want. So I just wanted to separate the two and make sure that fans of one, they can cross over. I have no issues with that, but I don't want to disappoint, you know, if they are strictly one genre or another.
So where does E.B. James come from?
They are all my names. That's my middle name, my
James.
Maiden name.
Your name's James.
And my father's name. It's all on my birth certificate. They are all on my birth certificate. Trust
me. There you go.
Wow. So being a writer, a lot of people would grow up going, oh, I want to be a writer. Very few actually do. How did you get there?
Oh, it's quite accidental, really. I don't know. I just began. But I have to say, I began at a time when the Australian fiction market, Christian fiction market, was on the rise, and a lot of Australian Christian fiction readers were, or a lot of Australian fiction readers were beginning to understand that Christian fiction was a thing, that they were really loving it and enjoying it. But at the time, there wasn't a lot of American Christian fiction in Australia. There were certain reasons for that. The marketing was not, it was regulated through distributors and whatnot. And so I introduced my first novel at a time when there was a great demand for it and not much coming in from America. So they went.
So, I mean,
huge.
People may know the Greenfield legacy. That's one that goes with your name. So you've changed so many things along the way.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Why do that, though?
I don't know. I get bored with one thing. No,
I think we all do. That's
not
great.
I think with this one, there was I'm actually making a social comment, to be perfectly honest, with the new one. Bit like Harriet Beecher Stowe with her Uncle Tom's Cabin, or Charles Dickens. You know, he was all really. I think he was making a social comment, and I am making a social comment that does not necessarily fit into the romantic genre. It didn't fit.
Because Jane and I were having this conversation before, and I was saying Christian fiction used to be this horrible twee stuff that was no better than Mills and Boone. The plots were really, really simple. The writing was really simple. And if you're used to reading decent novels and you picked up one of those, you would have gone, oh, I just can't bear another American something from the 1800s, Little House on the Prairie kind of stuff. It's like, oh, please. Yes. Is there anything better out there? Is that kind of the market you fed?
Look, I'll be honest with you. I've done the period drama thing,
but
and it is popular, but I have meddled in other genres. And let me talk up for a minute for all of my Australian Christian fiction writer friends right around the country who they are taking the challenge on head on. We discuss it at our writers' conference and say, enough of the bonnets, okay? Let's do something meaty. Let's get right into something that's gritty and that readers can really get their teeth into. And so we're all on the same track
here. It's not even the genre. I mean, I've read some good ones. It's just they think that you have to be really stupid because they're just, like I said, there's just such simple writing. Do you find that, Jane?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, let's chew over the new book. It's called Mortal Insight, and delightful to be having a cup of tea with Meredith Reske today in Coffee O'Clock. This is Coffee O'Clock. Jane and Sharon with you. And today the cuppa is with author Meredith Reske, is now writing under E.B. James, has turned from novels in the past. You may have read some of her work that is very much period drama, to crime. Now, this is a fabulous read. Can I just say that one of the things that I loved about this book is that you give mother-in-laws a great rap. Did your mother-in-law enjoy the book?
Oh, my mother-in-law? No, she probably doesn't read, actually.
I was going to say, you must have had a great mother-in-law or a great mum to model that from.
I think this might be modelled more upon my mother.
Yeah,
actually. Okay. Or maybe a little bit upon myself. I'm a mother-in-law now too, you see.
Yeah, because they always say that writers, there's so much autobiography, even in novels. Mm. Do you find that?
Occasionally I find myself popping up in characters, and occasionally characters have things about them that I recognise in somebody else. But I do have a good imagination, I can.
Clearly. Mm. And one of the things I wanted to ask, this is the first time you've written a crime novel. One of the things that I always find, like, I do like reading a good mystery, but I just get a little bit perplexed. Why do they always have to be so dark, and why does somebody have to die? Can you not just have the pearls go missing or something, or some kind of embezzlement? Why do they always have to be so kind of dark in nature?
It's a funny question to ask, because both in this crime drama and a murder mystery that I wrote a couple of years ago, Mellington Hall, I had a terrible job actually killing somebody off, because it's not really, you know, I knew it had to happen.
Yeah.
Because that's the genre.
Genre. Like I said, can't somebody just embezzle, and can't the mystery be finding the person who did it?
It would be, but then it wouldn't be a murder mystery, would it? Although this one is not a murder mystery. This is crime drama. Mm. And I didn't have a lot of death in it. But the one that I had, I actually had to get – I had a homicide detective friend. She stayed over, and I said to him, now, I need to talk to you. I said, something has happened in this house. And I gave him the outline, and I said, but I don't know what. You need to tell me. So he did. He told me, and he told me exactly how they would have found it, et cetera, because I needed to know that.
So is that part of the formula, that somebody does have to die in a crime drama?
Well, I don't think necessarily, because if you read John Grisham, not all of his is about death. Sometimes it is about embezzlement, as you say, or something like that.
But then there's always somebody running from death because they're afraid someone's going to kill them.
Yes, there's always got to be a threat there. Well, there has to be a threat.
A big part of this book is really conspiracy. And look, yes. I've got to say, I started to Google this drug that is in the book, which is in the water supply, because you convinced me. I thought it was real, and I'm really worried about it. Well, yeah, it was believable. Now, can you just pronounce it? Because I can't even pronounce the name.
Well,
I made it up. But that's what I mean. Can you pronounce it? You made it up.
I would say Tanadibetion.
Okay.
Ooh, that's
sort of what it's around.
Acronym TDB. Yes.
So, and basically this drug, this whole idea that if it got into the water system, it might actually affect crime rates. Where do you come up with something like this?
I don't know. Well, look, it is a metaphor. And I'm going to leave the readers to read it and see if they can figure out what the metaphor is for something that I believe is a serious issue in our society today that people won't pay attention to. That is the plot of the novel.
Because we were talking to you before, and you did say that you were making a social comment, like a lot of other landmark novels have done, or the writers have done through their novels in history. When you're writing a novel like that, do you set out to go, okay, I want to make a comment about such and such a subject, I'm going to write a novel about it? Or did you have this fabulous story and I thought, hey, that's a great way to...
Mm. No. It was actually an emotional response, really, to the social issue that I'm talking about. Do you think I should say what it is? I don't know if I should.
It's up to you.
About the social issue.
You might spoil it. Well, it might interest people if they know what it's about.
Well, true. Well, I'm frustrated about the high level of sexualisation and pornography in our society and the effects that it does have, and the fact that nobody really wants to talk about it or address it, and it's always pushed aside as a human rights issue, or, you know, as an issue of the Victorian ideals, and there's always excuses made. And I think even corruption to a certain extent, and that's what the novel, you know, addresses in that story too.
Did you have, like, speaking moments where you were looking over your shoulder or anything? Did you start to get paranoid when you were writing this book? Because you were, like, immersed in this world for a while. Mm.
No, because I'm making it all up. I'm God. When you write a book, you're God, you know?
Really?
Yeah, that's cool.
But it's so believable. It sort of reminded me, I've just been reading one of the, Da Vinci Code, Dan Brown. He sort of merges fact and fiction and all this, that it's almost believable. And that's what your book did to me, that I was really thinking, what is in the water supply that could be changing my emotions? So I guess if that's a tick for the book, that's a tick for me, because you made it believable.
Well, I tell you what, now you're making me want to go out and read it. Thanks very much, Meredith Reske. This is Coffee O'Clock.